You are listening to the preaching ministry of Faith Baptist Church.
Matthew chapter 5. This has actually been a text, I should say a passage, because what we're walking into is, in case you don't know, the Sermon on the Mount, a 3-chapter-long sermon that Jesus speaks. Of course, when Jesus spoke it, he wasn't thinking in chapters at all. He simply spoke truth as he needed to his disciples and preached, and they listened. They heard this message on a mountain, and they definitely got a chance to enjoy that teaching from the Lord. And this morning, we're going to focus in on a small couple of verses here that I trust will be a help to you. But I think you may be surprised by the topic we'll cover and how it applies to us. We're going to be looking at verses 33 to 37. Now, if you have a Bible like I do, there might be some subheadings or main titles for different sections where the Bible breaks off. If you're using the Pew Bible, I'm not sure if it has that or not. Perhaps your Bible does. But mine has something like this. At the beginning of verse 33, right on top it says, Jesus forbids oaths. Jesus forbids oaths. Now, if you read the rest of the Sermon on the Mount, there's lots of controversial things that Jesus says. He tells us that murder, of course, is wrong, just like you've always heard that murdering people is wrong. It's right there in the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not kill. But he says, did you know that? I go even further than that. I say, if you're angry with your brother in your heart, that is just the same as murder. You're in danger of the judgment. He says, thou shalt not commit adultery. You shouldn't be unfaithful to the person you're married to. And there's probably a lot of people in that audience who thought, well, I haven't done that. But then Jesus ups the ante and he says, actually, what I say is if you lust after a woman in your heart, you have committed adultery with her already. So already Jesus has been saying things that are, again, controversial, kind of lend to more of a strict standard as to how we should be thinking and behaving in our Christian lives. But when we come to verses 33 to 37, and we read about Jesus forbidding oaths, there's a good chance most of us are wiping our brow and saying, whew, I'm sure glad I didn't break that law this week. Unless, of course, you're a first century Jew, which I don't think any of us are. Now, I could probably ask for a raise of hands. I think I would probably know the answer, but I could ask here, how many of you swore an oath during the course of this past week? Or during the course of this past month? Or how about in the last year? Now, I probably might get an answer of a yes if, for example, you were a witness in a court of law. You probably swore an oath to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. I don't think any of us are in a political office, but if you were, then you were sworn in with some kind of oath, probably. So those are at least two different scenarios where we see oaths, but otherwise, we don't come across oaths in our daily lives. But they do appear in both of those settings that I just mentioned, both in a court of law, and if you are sworn into office, you repeat a pre-written oath while placing your Bible on, while placing your hand on a Bible. But outside of these official type of events, these very specific circumstances, most of us probably have never come across an oath in our life. However, I want to challenge you with this. At the heart of an oath is the legitimacy of a person's word. So when a person takes an oath on the witness stand, what they're doing is they're telling the judge and the members of the court that everything that they say in their testimony is the absolute truth. And should they not be telling the truth in their testimony, they're opening themselves up to scrutiny and even some repercussions. Some punishment may come afterward if they're not telling the truth. A politician who takes an oath is promising to uphold the laws of his country, his state, or his city, and he or she opens himself to potentially losing that office if they fail to uphold those laws. Swearing or taking an oath is all about the value of your word. So in this sense, you could say we all deal with this on a regular basis. If you have signed a contract for an apartment rental, or you're doing business with other people, if you make promises to family and friends in order to be a blessing to them or do something for them, what you're interacting with there is the value of your word. And that's the question Jesus is asking us in Matthew 5. What is the value that you place on your word? Now, here in Matthew 5, Jesus addresses multiple issues that all deal with the Mosaic law. What he clearly states in this chapter is that he did not come to destroy the law, but instead he came to do what? Fulfill it. So he's not here to get rid of Moses. Moses was good. It was there for a time. But now he is introducing something else. In other words, what his teaching affirms what Moses said, but it actually bolsters it. It actually ups the ante and makes it much more applicable to us as New Testament Christians, as his disciples. And do you know, we can actually say the same thing about Jesus' teaching on making oaths. This was not something that the Old Testament law required. Nobody was ever forced to make an oath. It was something voluntary, something you chose to do. Now God, knowing that this was a practice of his chosen people, he made rules to govern how people treated each other when they made oaths. But what he did was he went beyond the legal standard, which was what? He says it in verse 33. Again, you have heard, it was said to those of old, you shall not swear falsely, but shall perform your oaths to the Lord. Okay, so that's the standard of the Mosaic law. He's not actually quoting a verse. He's almost summarizing what Moses says there from the Pentateuch. But that's the idea. Don't swear falsely. Just fulfill every oath that you ever make. That's the law. That's the standard. But what is Jesus' standard? He tells us right in the next verse, I say to you, do not swear at all. His standard was avoid swearing altogether. Now, the Sermon on the Mount is a message for Jesus' disciples. And since we are a church of Jesus' disciples, this message is indeed for us too. But you might be asking how. How could a message like this apply? Brother Christian, nobody uses oaths today. Not me, not anybody I know. So how does this apply to us, except in those situations we've already talked about? Well, as we dive into this subject, what we're going to learn is that at the bottom lies the importance of our words and our perceptions of each other. The problem that Jesus addresses here of making false oaths is not just a first century Jewish problem. It's a problem that Christians can face in 2019. It's a human problem. It's a problem of how we craft, we shape our words and our perceptions of each other so that people view us the way that we want them to. And this leads to our main thought for today, which is this. Avoid impressing people with your reputation by standing behind the integrity of your word. We're going to unpack some of what that means, but that is, I believe, the point Jesus is trying to get across to us here today, that we need to avoid impressing people with our reputations and just stand behind the integrity of our word. Now, in order to unpack this, one thing that we need to clarify for ourselves is, what is the Jewish concept of making oaths, of swearing oaths? And that's point number one. Understand the Jewish concept of making oaths. Jesus doesn't really go into a description of it, but for our purposes, we need to know what he's talking about. Any Jewish person in that audience, which most of them would have been Jewish, knew exactly what he was talking about. They didn't need an explanation. But we do, because, again, we are not in a context that is filled with people making oaths, certainly not in a Mosaic law context. So what Jesus tells his disciples is the Mosaic law forbids them from swearing falsely. Instead, they should fulfill their oaths to the Lord. Now, let me be clear about something. When Jesus says swearing, he's not talking about using curse words. He's referring to a Jewish practice that goes back to the Old Testament. Again, he's not talking about a specific verse. Often some of these passages where he's saying, again, I tell you this, but I say to you this. Often he is quoting a specific verse. In this case, that's not what he's doing. He's kind of giving us a summary of all that the Mosaic law says about oaths and swearing oaths and making vows, these kinds of things. Now, an oath in the Old Testament involved more than just putting your hand on a Bible and repeating a pre-written set of words. Swearing an oath involved this, and this is a quote, a solemn statement affirmed to be true before God. So if you wanted to say something emphatically, something that was absolutely true, and you wanted to bolster what you say, you wanted it to have more weight, you wanted it to have some solemnity to it, you swore an oath. Now, an oath could be spoken in connection to a promise you made, or if you made some kind of a religious vow. If you're a Jew in the Old Testament, those were the kinds of situations in which you would use that. And the idea was this: by connecting your words to God, who is always true, always honest, always faithful to his promises, if I make my vow in connection to him, that means people are going to believe what I say. I'm going to do exactly what I say because I'm banking on it with the character of God. He's always truthful. My words are going to be just as truthful. Now, if you paid attention a few weeks ago, Pastor actually gave an example of this from the book of Judges. Do you remember the story of Jephthah and his daughter? God had raised him up to defeat an enemy nation, the Ammonites. And before going into battle, Jephthah does something very interesting, something he didn't have to do, but he chose to do. He made a vow that if God helped him defeat this enemy, he was going to make a sacrifice of the first thing that came out of his house when he got back from battle. And boy, was that a bad idea. Because after he gets back from battle, who should meet him at the front door but his daughter? And the Bible makes it very plain, his only daughter. Really sad situation, of course. But notice when he comes to his home and he sees his daughter, what his response is. Alas, my daughter, you have brought me very low. You are among those who trouble me, for I have given my word to the Lord, and I cannot go back on it. Do you see what this demonstrates is that the Jewish people took God's name very seriously. When you took an oath and connected it to the name of God, you could not go back on it. Now, the Jewish people understood this, and they often came up against the same problem that Jephthah did. What happens when you make an oath, you connect it with the name of God, but then it becomes very difficult to fulfill that oath? What do you do? Well, for Jephthah, he had to make a very difficult choice. He was probably in one of the worst catch-22 situations you can think of. I mean, this is really bad. Do I sacrifice my daughter and fulfill my oath to the Lord, or do I just not fulfill my oath? Okay, well, you can say, well, Jephthah, just don't fulfill your oath. I mean, don't do that to your daughter. That's awful. Well, it wasn't that simple, because in the Mosaic Law, God strictly forbade swearing falsely by his name. Notice what Leviticus 19:12 says. You shall not swear by my name falsely, nor shall you profane the name of your Lord, of your God. I am the Lord. And there's other verses like this that give the same idea, the same thought. But Jephthah was in one of the worst pickles, and it was either sacrificing his daughter or going against the Lord, which was, you can't swear by my name falsely. And again, this verse isn't really talking about using God's name in vain. That's not something the Bible would condone, using God's name like a curse word. But the idea in this verse is, if you make an oath and you put God's name on it, don't swear falsely by the name of God, because you're putting God's reputation, his name, is on the line. So if you're making an oath and you're going to invoke God's name, you better follow through with it. And that was the problem that Jephthah came across. Now, as 21st century Christians, we might be tempted to wonder, why does this matter to us? Brother Christian, I would never do something like that, because that sounds silly. It sounds almost primitive. Why would I want to take an oath on the name of God? I mean, nobody really does that today. And even if people do, the situation is not usually too serious. I think we're probably all familiar with, I think people still say this, things like they're telling a story and they might say, I swear to God that this and this and this happened. And they'll use that kind of language. Now, they don't necessarily mean too much by it, but usually if someone is using that kind of language in a conversation, you're not thinking that, okay, this person is extra serious now. No, more than likely, you're almost questioning, why did they feel the need to say it that way? Why did they feel the need to say, I swear to whatever? could be God or could be some other thing that they might swear to. But just because someone invokes God, I'm talking about today in 2019, just because someone invokes God or religion in their words, it doesn't necessarily mean they're more serious. In fact, it probably makes their wording more suspicious and questionable. So how do Jesus' words apply to us? Well, think about what an oath does. What does it accomplish? If you wanted your words to have extra weight, if you wanted your words to have more gravity, then you added the name of God to what you were saying. And really, you could kind of sum it up like this. What you're telling someone when you make an oath like this, if you're a Jewish person making an oath, what you're saying is, if you don't believe me in what I'm saying, then take it up with God, because he backs up what I say. Now, what it really is it's a way to hide the integrity of your words behind the integrity of something else. And in this case, that something else is God. You want to hide your own reputation behind the reputation of someone better. And really, you could say the thought is, when you're interacting with people and either you're making a promise or you're telling them a story or you're giving an account of events that happened, you're making some kind of bold, dramatic statement, you don't necessarily know if people believe you or not. You'd like to think they believe you. You'd like to be optimistic about that, but you're not totally sure. So just to be safe, just to make sure that they believe you, you say, you know what? Let me swear this as an oath to God that this is what happened. Or when I make this promise, I'm going to fulfill it. I'm going to come through on it. I swear on God's name. It's pretty bold to do that, but that was the idea. That's what they would do. Now, here's the question for us. Do we ever do this? Do we ever hide behind the integrity or the reputation of God? Here are some examples of what this might sound like in 2019. If we're telling someone about a decision we're about to make, or about something that we're planning to do in the near future, and you know, we're not totally sure if this is the right thing. In fact, we're telling this person what we're telling them, but we're not even sure if they're with us. We're not even sure if they're even in agreement with what we're doing. It might be questionable what we're doing. Who knows? But we say things like, you know, God has really given me a peace about this. Or I really feel like this is the Lord's will. Or I really feel like this is something God has given me a lot of peace about. And suddenly, once we bring God into the equation, it's like, okay, we don't have to ask any more questions. We don't have to worry about what other people are thinking because I've brought God into the situation and he absolutely condones what I'm doing. Now, let me be very clear. It is not wrong to say God has given me peace about something or I believe something is God's will. That's not wrong at all. What I'm challenging us with is we need to be very careful when we say things like that. We need to use caution and wisdom, because what we're doing is saying God is in agreement with what I'm doing or the decision I'm about to make. And boy, just like with these oaths, it better be true. But how do you know? How can you be sure? Christians can sometimes hide what they're doing behind the reputation of God. And so what we think is, if I tell someone God is leading me or God has given me peace about something, then other people won't ask me any other questions about what I'm doing. I'm free and clear. It's phrases like this that are 21st century spins on the Jewish oath. It's our way of adding weight to what we say. But there are times when Christians use these phrases to avoid what's really going on under the surface. And again, it isn't wrong to say you believe that God is leading you to do something or that God has given you peace. Do you know that if you have spent time praying about a decision and you've looked at his word and scripture and you feel like this is something that the Bible doesn't condemn, it actually maybe approves what you're doing? If you've spoken with godly counsel about it, you know, there are other things you can include in that. Maybe using patience and wisdom and other things. But all of those things factored in, if you say, you know, brother, I really feel like God's leading me to do this thing. Okay, I have no reason to question what you're saying. And really, none of us should question that. But we have to be careful when we drop the name of God in our circumstances that we're using his name carefully. that when we invoke God in a conversation we're having with somebody else, and we're saying, God approves of what I'm doing, okay, well, I hope you're sure. Because if you say, God is for this, but you're not entirely sure, actually, you don't even know if Scripture is okay with this, or you haven't even taken time to pray about it even, it might be better just to leave him out of it and say, you know, this is personally what I feel is the right thing to do, but maybe you can help me sort this out. You know, what wisdom do you have? You know, what would your advice be? And it's just, it's a responsibility on our part as believers to make sure that we don't invoke God into something where we're not actually sure that he's in the middle of that. Because if he's not, then what we're doing is being deceptive. And that is something that ought not to be the case in our conversations with each other. So this is the Jewish understanding of an oath and really the heart of what is happening. The Jewish people, they made oaths so that in front of people, they looked good. There was a facade of religiousness and piety, and look at me, I use the name of God because he backs up what I say. And we as Christians today can still do the same thing. We just don't say, I swear an oath to God or anything else. We use it in other ways. Now, here's the question for us. How does this apply? Well, Jesus does have an ethic, a moral guideline for us as we think about this matter of our words and perceptions of each other. We need to follow the ethic of Jesus when we give our word. So if we're making a promise, if we're giving a statement, if we're giving an account of something, what does Jesus tell us we should be saying? What are the kinds of words, the kinds of language that we should use? Well, Jesus knew that when Jewish people of his day made oaths, it was that facade that they're putting up. Now, in line with many of Jesus' other teachings in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus knows what the law is, and he states, this is what the law says, but here is my dramatic stand against what the law says. Or I shouldn't say against it. It's in sharp contrast to what the law says. So if the law said, don't kill, well, Jesus says, don't even get angry with your brother. And in this case, the law says, keep your oaths, don't swear falsely on the name of God. Jesus says, if you're my disciple, you shouldn't be swearing any oaths at all. So while Jewish leaders were encouraging the people in their synagogues, you know, just when you make, if you ever make an oath, and that's a good thing to do, it's a very religious thing to do, just make sure that you keep it and that you fulfill your oath, especially if you're using the name of God. Jesus strictly forbade oaths as a practice among his followers. Now, why was he so strict? Well, when he says don't swear at all, I want to be clear about this as well. He's not saying that if you're ever in a court of law and you're giving a testimony of something, you're a witness on the witness stand, don't swear an oath in that circumstance. He's not saying that. He's not saying if you're a politician, you shouldn't be sworn into office. You shouldn't repeat an oath of office for yourself. That's not what he's talking about. There are some religious groups that think that that is the case, but that's not the primary application here. What Jesus is forbidding is the kinds of oaths that would have been familiar to first century Jews, the people that he's talking to. So in our context, we can take these words to mean this. Christians must be truthful people. When we speak, we're talking to people, we have conversations, again, whether it's making a promise or giving an account of something, we should not have to feel the need to bolster what we say with the name of God. It should be that I can stand behind my word, and my word means what it means. And we're going to talk a little bit more about what that looks like. But this is the moral guideline that Jesus gives for his followers. And there's really two aspects of this that I want us to look at in the rest of the message here today. Letter A, first of all, do not try to impress God with spin. Do not try to impress God with spin. Again, for the Jewish people, swearing an oath was a way to present yourself as a religious person. You're giving off that very pious reputation so that other people look at you and think, now there's a good man right there. He swears by the name of God, and he always fulfills what he says. It made you look very good in front of other people. And again, Jews also saw a potential problem. If you swore by the name of God, but it became very difficult to fulfill that oath, what would you do? you're stuck, just like Jephthah was. To avoid this, the rabbis, many of the Jewish leaders, came up with a very intricate system to avoid this problem. Instead of swearing on God's name, they would swear on something else, something related to God or some kind of religious symbol. Here's a list of different things that they would use to swear by. So we can avoid the name of God because we don't want to swear by God's name. That would put us in a real pickle. But we can swear by these things. They would often swear by heaven or earth, the sun or the stars, a city, which Jesus mentions that in this passage, the city of Jerusalem. They would sometimes swear by the Mosaic Law, by the temple and the items in the temple. Jesus actually mentions this later in the Gospels when he talks to the Pharisees about, you know, you guys make such a big fuss over, do we swear an oath by the temple or by the gold that's in the temple? And to Jesus, it's like, what difference does it make? That's not what we should be arguing about. That's not what we should be discussing. We shouldn't even be swearing oaths. People would swear by a king or some kind of political leader. They would swear by their parents. Wow. Swearing an oath on the integrity of mom and dad, that's a tall order, right? And if all else fails, if you didn't want to swear on some outside item or a person, you could swear on your own head. Now again, all this feels very strange, very foreign to us, because none of us do this. None of us, literally, none of us will make an oath on our head or on the sun and the stars. That's just not the way we communicate with each other. But in Jesus' day, this would have been very prevalent, something that they would have understood as, yeah, I just heard somebody swearing an oath yesterday about this. This was something fairly common. If you wanted to bolster what you were saying, you could use any one of these things, and the list probably goes on, but these are just some examples. So what's the thought here? The thought is, if you didn't use the name of God in your oath, then what you said was not binding at all. So should it come to a catch-22 like Jephthah, where you're either going to do something difficult or not fulfill your oath, well, you could say, you know what? I could kind of squeeze out of this oath because I never actually used the name of God. I never actually said I swear on God's name. I did swear on heaven and earth, or I did swear on the king or on the city of Jerusalem. So that's fine. As long as I didn't use God's name, I'm okay. I'm safe. But you could still look good in front of other people because all of these were very important things to them. And we're going to kind of look at just the examples that Jesus gives. So you can make an oath in order to sound pious. But then, if you wanted to get out of it, you could always play the card, I never used God's name. Now let me ask you a question. Do you think Jesus, or God for that matter, is ever fooled by these kinds of word games? Not at all. He knew exactly what was going on. He saw right through it, and so Jesus strongly condemned it. And he condemns it starting in verse 34. I say to you, don't swear at all, neither by heaven, for it is God's throne. So, don't swear by heaven because that is God's throne. That's God's dwelling place. A Jewish person playing the oath game could argue that, hey, I never used the name of God in my oath. I just swore by heaven, so I'm fine. I'm off the hook. And Jesus says, oh no. Because in his mind, in the view of Jesus, the connection between God and his dwelling place in heaven is strong enough that if you were to take an oath on heaven, it bears the same weight. In other words, God's not fooled. If a person swore by heaven, they were still responsible to fulfill that oath. They could not get off the hook. Now, what about if you swore by the earth? It's also another big thing. I mean, God doesn't necessarily dwell there. We know God is everywhere. God is omnipresent, but heaven is more of his dwelling place. So the earth must be okay, right? Well, Jesus says no in verse 35. Don't swear by the earth, for it is his footstool. That's a title given to the earth. You see that in the Psalms. You see it in the book of Isaiah. The idea is that since God made the earth, and he is the one who sustains it, you can't swear by the earth without calling his integrity into question. And Jesus also uses the example of a city, namely the city of Jerusalem. He even calls it, in verse 35, the city of the great king. Jerusalem, in the Jewish mind, and this is still very much the case today, It is God's specially chosen place where his name resides. You can go back to the books of the Kings, which we studied last week with Pastor Overmiller. You can read through that and discover that when God instituted the temple under King Solomon, he wanted a place for his name to be established. And for him, the only place that could be was the city of Jerusalem. It is just his specially chosen piece of real estate where his name belongs, where his name should be revered and glorified. So if Jews made an oath on the city, Jesus is saying, you still can't get out of that oath. Jerusalem was the place for his name. It carried the same weight as his name. Now finally, in verse 36, Jesus tackles this whole problem of swearing by one's head. Now you say, okay, Brother Christian, I think I can see the connection here. If you swear by heaven or earth or by by Jerusalem, these are all things related to God. Now, my head is my head. So if I swear by my head, that shouldn't be a problem, right? I mean, it's mine. It's on my body. I can swear by whatever I want to on my body. And Jesus still says no. He still forbids even this oath from happening. Now, there's a couple ways you could look at this. When you made an oath on your head, as odd as that sounds, what you're essentially saying is, I'm putting my head on the line if I don't fulfill this oath. Your life is on the line. And even your life you cannot fully control. Now, there's another angle on this, and it's not necessarily easy to tell which one Jesus is focusing on, but it is interesting. He does mention that none of us have the power to make one hair white or black. Okay, what's he talking about? Well, Jesus is not saying that it's impossible for people to change the color of their hair. People did that back then. They do it today. It's no problem for people to change the color of their hair. So what's he saying? The image of white hair reminds us of age. It reminds us of something that God controls. He's the one who orders the aging process. None of us can reverse that. And if you were a first century Jewish person or any person living in that time, I mean, you thought, there's no way that the aging process is going to be reversed. I can't change that. And part of the aging process is, of course, getting white hair. And so the picture was this. Since you cannot control the aging process, including your changing hair color, what right do you have to swear by your own head? So you see, no matter what the Jewish people tried to swear by to make themselves look pious, Jesus says, you're still not out of the game. It's still problematic. Because no matter what, you are putting God's reputation on the line by swearing an oath by any one of these things. And at the end of the day, all of these oaths are just attempts to give a false impression. They wanted to look pious by using this religious language, and instead, they just look silly. God is not impressed by these games. He's not pleased when we try to give a false impression of ourselves. So as you can see, we may not take oaths today. We might not swear on our heads or on the sun and the stars, but we sure do try to give an impression of ourselves that people are going to accept. And at the heart of making an oath is that problem, trying to make ourselves look better than we are. And to accomplish that, we might say things that are not entirely true. We can claim that God supports our decisions, but then in reality, we're not completely sure. So at the end of the day, the thing that Jesus is getting at is this. Don't try to impress him with your version of spin, whatever that looks like. Simply speak the truth before God and your fellow man, and you'll be right in line with Jesus' teaching here on the Sermon on the Mount. Now let's look finally at letter B. Give your word integrity by being truthful. So we've seen the negative angle on this, which is, don't try to impress God by spinning the truth, by making deceitful statements. Just say what is true. And that's the point here. Give your word integrity by being truthful. He concludes his teaching, Jesus does, by instructing his disciples to simply let their answer, their statement, their promise stand on its own. So whether your answer is yes or no, you stand behind your answer without feeling the need to make it more truthful.
Look at verse 37. But let your yes be yes, and your no, no, for whatever is more than these is from the evil one. Now again, Jesus is telling us you shouldn't feel the need to have to make your statement, your words, more accurate by invoking God. That's what was happening with the Jewish oaths. They were trying to accomplish that. But as a disciple of Christ, you should speak words that are truthful. If you make a promise, people should expect that you'll follow through. If you're giving an account of something that happened, it shouldn't be that you're spinning the facts, that you're exaggerating things or diminishing something that really took place. You should give an accurate account of what happened. Any statement you make should not have a spin or a hidden agenda behind it. And I would say that's certainly true in the church. It should not be that in the body of Christ we're talking like that to each other. It ought to be that we're as transparent as we can be. Now, when our word cannot stand on its own integrity, we've got to say it's probably standing on something else. And that something else is probably deception. That's why Jesus says anything other than a simple yes or no answer, a simple this is what my answer is, this is what the statement is, and that's that. Anything more is from the evil one. If we use double speech in our interactions with each other, we can say it certainly doesn't come from God. It has a satanic source. It's not the truth. Not only is this kind of speech wrong, it's also judged by God. Notice what James writes in his epistle, James 5. This is actually a half-brother of Jesus writing this in the first century church, and he wants to remind believers that have been scattered all around because of persecution. He wants to remind them, brothers and sisters, remember what Jesus said on the Sermon on the Mount. If you were there, here's what he said. If you weren't there, here's what he said. But above all, my brethren, do not swear, either by heaven or by earth, or with any other oath, but let your yes be yes and your no, no. Same words as Jesus. Lest you fall into judgment. We can come under God's discipline when we talk to each other this way. So if for no other reason, we should avoid this kind of spin in our everyday conversations because it's wrong, it comes from the wrong source, and God will judge it. God is against it. Now, as we conclude here this morning, you might still be wondering, for the Christian, how do we apply this teaching on oaths that Jesus is talking about here? Well, let's finish with some hopefully helpful applications to each one of us. First of all, we must understand that God always keeps his promises. In order to be like him, we should be people of our word. Now, this whole point is based on the character of God. God is always truthful. God is always faithful to what he's going to accomplish. One of the Hebrew words that pastors mentioned in his Old Testament series, and I love it meditating on this word, is the word chesed. I'm sure you pronounce it. He can pronounce it more properly than I can. But chesed, it is one of the most challenging Hebrew words to fully define and explore what it means. But simply, it is God's merciful faithfulness and his loving kindness. I mean, there's so many ideas wrapped up into that one word. It shows up repeatedly in the Old Testament. God's chesed, his loving kindness and faithfulness. He will always accomplish what he sets out to do. And you and I, as his children, as the ones that he has saved, we have an obligation to be like him and reflect him in this world. And the only way to do that is to be as truthful as he is. None of us are going to bat 1,000 on that. But by God's grace, we can be as truthful as we can be to each other and to other people in the world that are watching us. They're listening to what we say. And they want to know, that person's a Christian. That my coworker, my classmate, my neighbor claims to be a Christian. Do they ever spin the truth? Are they ever deceitful in any way? Do they ever make a promise and try to back out of it? Those are the kinds of things that the unsaved world notices. Yes, even for Christians. And they're watching to see if our ethic and our walk matches what we talk about. Who is this Jesus who has saved us from sin? Well, I hope he's the one who saved you from deception. I hope he's the one who saved you from spinning the truth. That is certainly the kind of God we have. We have a responsibility to be God's image bearers. That's who we are. He's made you in his image. And part of that is always telling the truth. So reflect his truthfulness by avoiding spin and by being truthful in your speech. Secondly, we need to avoid making excessive promises or making promises just to impress other people. Now, again, here's where some clarification is needed. Jesus is not telling us it's wrong to make promises to people. It's not. God makes promises to us. He certainly wouldn't do something that he certainly wouldn't tell us not to do something that he does himself. He makes promises throughout Scripture. The point is, when you make one, keep one. And I would say for moms and dads, that's especially pertinent for your children. Spouses, it's important for each other. With friends in church, friends in school, any kind of relationship that you have. It's just part of being a decent person in society. But more importantly, it's part of being a biblical Christian, keeping the promises that you make. Now, of course, it isn't wrong to make promises, especially if you are keeping your word. But just recognize this. When you fail to keep your promises, you're losing credibility with the people that you love, with the people you've made promises to. And furthermore, we're not acting like God, the one who is always faithful to keep his word. So just let your yes be yes and your no be no. Now, some Christians fall into the trap of also making promises just so that they can look good in front of other people. And this can happen when it comes to prayer requests. Have you ever had it happen to you where someone presents you with a prayer request and you say, of course, brother, of course, sister, I'm going to pray for you. And then inevitably, you forget. And you don't remember what was said. And when you're asked about it again, you're kind of taken by surprise. Oh, yeah, that's right. I did say I was going to pray for that. That can happen. Now, certainly, none of us has 100% memory. So we shouldn't expect that every single prayer request that we give to somebody, they're always going to remember, and we shouldn't hold them to that. That's not a fair expectation of anybody. But if we're a family, which we are, we're united under Christ as our head, then we must make an effort to be aware of each other's needs. That means listening when people are giving prayer requests. That means being here on a Wednesday night for evenings for the Wednesday prayer service if you can. That means coming to days of prayer and hearing what's going on in our church family so that we can know how to pray for each other. All of those things are important. So by all means, let me say this. Offer to pray for people when they give you a request, but follow through with it. And if that means that you need to give a little more due diligence, maybe it means writing it down, maybe it means saying, you know what, I'm going to talk to so-and-so next week. They asked me to pray for this thing. I'm going to ask them next week, hey, how did that go? Hey, what's the update on that? Can I know what's going on? I love how ladies in the church are keeping in touch with each other through some kind of a thread of prayer requests and things going on. That's wonderful. Let's keep that up. Don't use that as your crutch and say, well, I'm part of the group, so at least everybody knows I'm part of the group. No, pray about things. Give diligence to doing that. And men, we may not have something like that available, but you know what? There's no reason we couldn't start it, or there's no reason that we couldn't be faithful to keeping our promises to pray for each other. The point is that your word should mean something. And that's whether people know that you're keeping your word or not. By God's grace, we can do that. Finally, number three, avoid a casual attitude about your word, especially with your church family. Now, think carefully about the promises and the statements that you make in front of different groups of people. Does your word or the integrity of your word change based on who you're with? Does your word mean different things to different people? Do you look for ways to back out of the promises that you make? This is what the Jews were doing with their oaths. They were saying, if I swear by heaven or earth or the sun or the stars, hey, I can walk away from this oath unscathed, no repercussions. Well, we can be guilty of the same if we're not careful. We can try to portray to people an image that is false, but our attitude toward our word should be completely rigid. My word means exactly what it means. It's always going to be the truth. And this should especially be the case with our church family. Now, let me say this. With people in the world, we are often very careful. Because, again, we're probably, especially as Christians, very aware people are watching us. And especially in a city like New York, we want to be careful that, hey, if I'm doing a business deal with someone, or I'm signing a contract, or I'm making a promise to so-and-so, if they're not saved, you know, they're probably not going to be as forgiving. So let me make sure that I follow through with it, because it's really important for my testimony that I follow through with what I say. That's a good thing. We should be conscious of our testimony. But can I say we should be just as conscious, if not more conscious, with our church family? Often what can happen in a church is that we presume that we're going to be forgiving of one another should I not come through with something. So if I make a promise to a brother or sister in church, hey, you know what, if I have to back out of it for some reason, I'm off the hook. It shouldn't be a problem because they're going to forgive me. They're a Christian, right? And friends, while it might be true that we should forgive each other, and certainly that's a Christian thing to do, we shouldn't bank on that. That shouldn't be the way we interact with each other. No matter who you're with, Christian or not, your word should be as good as gold. Just because other people, the people you make promises to or make statements to, are Christians, it doesn't give us the right to take our word lightly. Our word should remain the same, whoever we're with, whatever group of people are around us. Now, I bet you didn't think that a message on oaths could be so applicable to Christians in this day and age. But Jesus' words do mean something for us. It's not here in the Bible for no reason. It's here with the intention of getting us to think. This problem of making oaths of our words and our perceptions that we try to change for each other, it's not just a first century Jewish problem. It's a problem that Christians can face in 2019. Now, a few weeks ago, Pastor challenged us with this matter of us being a family, and specifically he talked about us being a brotherhood, having each other's back. Can I say this is one way that as a church family we can have one another's back, that our word means something to each other. We do this, I trust, in our families. We do this in our work relationships because those relationships matter to us. They're important. So when I make a statement, when I give my word to those people that I love, I'm going to keep it because those relationships are important. I don't want to break them. I hope that's the case with your spouse, with your kids, with those loving relationships you have. Friends, it ought to be the same at Faith Baptist Church. Let's be truthful with each other and strive to make our church community a place where our word has integrity all the time. And by God's grace, I believe that can be done.
Thank you for tuning in to the preaching ministry of Faith Baptist Church. We are conveniently located in Corona, New York City, and are devoted to loving God and making disciples. For more resources and helpful information about our church, visit studygodsword.com. We'd also like to extend a personal invitation for you and your family to worship with us on Sunday at 10 o'clock in the morning, followed by a luncheon and an uplifting time of interactive Bible study for teenagers and adults after that. If you have young children, they will really enjoy our exciting Bible-based children's ministry that also occurs in the afternoon session. If you have any questions about the church or would like to learn more about how to have a personal relationship with God, please give us a call or leave some feedback at studygodsword.com. We would be thrilled to meet you in person and show you firsthand what God is doing at Faith Baptist Church. Until next time, may God richly bless you.